Hello, and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway Podcast, a podcast for innovators, collaborators, and pioneers of our industry. This recording is one of our August webinar, where we heard all about last mile deliveries from Mike Cutts of Iveco, Stuart Murphy of Raw Mail, and Paul McCormack of Decarbon Logistics. Stay tuned for the podcast that delivers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EV Cafe. Apologies for the usual chaos. I'm Johnny Berry, and I'm the host, and in my day job, I am Head of Decarbonisation, Innovation and Strategy at Navuna Vehicle Solutions. It's great to have you all here today as we explore a critical and timely topic, last mile deliveries and the future of sustainable logistics. Last mile delivery is the final and often most crucial step in the supply chain as consumer demands shift towards faster, more sustainable options. The pressure is on to innovate and find solutions that can meet these expectations while also reducing our carbon footprint and cleaning up the air that we breathe. Now, as you might have noticed, I'm joined by only 80% of the wonderful EV Cafe team today, as unfortunately John Curtis can't be with us as he's currently on the EV rally with Greenfleet in Scotland. Very selfish of him. We'll certainly miss his input, and I'm sure we'll look forward to hearing all about his experience for when he returns. But we do have, in a particular order, Mr. Paul Kirby from EV Essentials, who will no doubt weigh in and share his insights on how electric vans are reshaping last mile deliveries. We, of course, have Sarah Sloman, recently injured. I'm sure you'll share that a little bit later on. She's from Payfruit, and she's here to discuss how the evolving payment technologies are supporting the logistics industry and enhancing the efficiency of last mile operations. And finally, Sam Clark. Moving on. Sam Clark is actually quite important for today's conversation because he has hands-on experience with last mile deliveries, and no doubt will share his insights on how public infrastructure is set to play a crucial role in that too. So we're also we're thrilled to have you, Sam.
Thanks, Johnny.
Right, so it's been 4 years, but. We're also thrilled to welcome our guest speakers for today. They are Stuart Murphy, Head of Fleet Transformation at Royal Mail, who talk about Royal Mail's journey in electrifying their fleet for last mile deliveries. Paul McCormack, CEO of Decarb Logistics Solutions, who will share how his company is improving efficiency in last mile logistics. And finally, last but not least, Mike Cutts, Business Line Director at Iveco, who will discuss how Iveco is leading the way in providing electric commercial vehicles for last mile delivery solutions. But before we jump in, I just want to take a moment to say a huge thank you to our gold sponsors. They are the AA, Europcar, Iveco, Payfruit, Webfleet, and Zaptec. Your support is instrumental in making these discussions, these webinars, these podcasts possible. And as always, if you have any questions or want to contribute to this discussion, then please do join via the Zoom link posted on the EV Cafe LinkedIn page if you aren't already. Because JC's not around, I'll be manning the mailroom today, and the best question will win a mug. That's up to me to decide this time around. So let's kick things off and dive into today's discussion on last mile deliveries. And as always, we start with questions to the team. Remember, you have just 40 seconds to answer each question.
So time it.
Oh, no.
And it makes my job a lot easier when it comes to editing for short form content later on. So, Paul. You've got two questions. Let's go straight to you. First of all, I'm going to talk about what's coming up the weekend, Paul. So
I've got 40 seconds for that. You can't do me on that.
30 seconds now.
All right. I'll give you a little bit more time. But let's start with that show, shall we? So, you know, at the EV Cafe, we are very busy. We've got a very busy week. Why don't you let our wonderful audience know what we've got planned for this weekend, Paul?
So a whistle stop tour of the wonderful car fest, which we get to do the EV Cafe Village in. We have the AA, we have Europe Car, we have Iveco. We also have products from BYD. We have a Royal Mail first, but we'll talk about that when Stuart comes along because it is a world first. It's exciting. We've got converted vehicles from Felton cars and electric classic cars. We've also got vehicles from Iveco, of course, and the AA and Europe Car. And we have got speaker sessions galore, including Ross Brawn, Jason Plato, Rick Parfitt Jr., of course, me, John Curtis, and me, and somebody else. Lots of people. Really, really qualitative and insightful conversation across the 3 days.
Well, we need reasons why people might want to come. No.
Okay. So people might want to come because, I mean, this is Carfest, the Chris Evans event that is in the south near Basingstoke. And there are live stages with music. And, of course, you've got the EV Cafe in amongst it all. But there's vehicles there. There's track time. There's Spa Fest, Adventure Fest. This is an event to come to for a myriad of reasons. Hence, not a hope of getting it into 40 seconds.
Excellent, Paul. Right, I'm going to give you a question that's associated to today's topic now. That's all right?
Yes.
So, Paul, will cargo bikes play a major role in the future of last mile deliveries?
I do believe that cargo bikes will play a major role in the future of deliveries. And I believe this because there are companies currently today making it work. Now, we all know of companies that haven't been profitable for a period of time before breaking into profit and then becoming the storm that really changes the landscape. And I really feel that whilst they won't be the whole answer, they will be part of the solution for inner city deliveries, working with all of the major companies in the future.
How are we doing for time there, Sarah?
Didn't start it.
Damn, I thought I was really pressing.
You did actually do very well. I was watching, but I just didn't press the thing. So well done.
Find out later when I replay it, Paul.
Yeah.
Sam, I've got a question for you.
Ooh.
Yes.
Sam.
Same question.
I know that.
Sam, will cargo bikes play a big role in supporting last mile deliveries in the future?
Ah, you said big role. Question.
Major role.
Major.
Clever.
Well, either way, the answer is no. However, it does have its place. So I think that all different types of last mile logistics needs to work in harmony. But is a major or a big contributor? Absolutely not. The most common and the best and most efficient way of getting last mile movements around inner cities is in larger vans that can do consolidation. So we get less vehicles on the road, not more congested cycle paths with cargo cycles that then have to double handle everything, which is inherently expensive. So whilst everything has its place, it's not a major contributor. No, the electric van is king and will always be king in last mile delivery.
Thank you, Sam.
Have that.
Pretty good.
Ooh. Ooh. Okay. Sarah, I'm not going to ask the same question. It's going to get pretty tedious, isn't it?
Yeah, rule for the audience, yes.
Sarah, can innovative payment technologies make last mile logistics smoother and more efficient?
Definitely. No, absolutely. Payment technology is vastly overlooked in streamlining the way in which people move around a city, and obviously reduces that all important downtime. If you can do what you need to do, top up and charge and go whilst you're doing something else, then your efficiency gains are going to be better. But we do know there's a huge way to go to get that right for everyone. And of course, things like cargo bikes and cycles will be done overnight. But of course, the vans are going to need a little more, a bit more logistical planning. Oh, not bad. It's hard timing yourself, I would just say. The pressure.
You're looking at the clock.
No, I am not looking at the clock. I was looking at you lot.
You're not human, though, Sarah. Yeah. Not anymore.
Johnny, there's a couple of good comments in the quite fun. Paul Barnfather said cargo bikes are everywhere in Denmark, and you're absolutely right, they are, but we're not in Denmark. And it's a very much of a cultural thing, and it doesn't always work in different parts of the world just because it works in one, and we should learn and adopt from other countries. But there's always been a cultural difference in regards to the way in which we operate our cities. So it's not always a like for like, in my opinion. And the other one, which I just noticed, is what about drone last mile deliveries? It simply can't happen in last mile because they're not even allowed to do drone deliveries in urban areas because of the health and safety reasons. Not even thinking about how expensive and difficult it is to move them. But there are places like the Isle of Skye, for example, where it could be very, very useful, especially
or
for
Southampton,
medical
things. Where there have been trials of drone deliveries for the health service.
Drug deliveries and little things like that. Yeah, again, brilliant solution, not scalable, but still brilliant in its own niche, for sure.
And also, the last mile isn't just urban. The last mile is the last mile, wherever that last mile is, whether it's on the Shetland Islands or whether it's in central London, it's still the last mile. So last mile for drone is definitely part of the solution. And also is already helping, as Sarah said, in Southampton, but also on the Scottish Islands as well, where drone deliveries are being trialled, I believe, by our very own Royal Mail, I believe. So we can check that with Stuart later.
There's a wonderful thing that happens all the time is this kind of UK lens feels big, but is incredibly narrow. What I really hope we can do on this webinar in the chat and on the comments is to pull out some other examples of where last mile delivery has been successful with micromobility. And yes, I do include mopeds in that. So I'm looking forward to the session. I hope we've got some great questions for Stuart, Mike and Paul. Johnny, I presume we are running over time.
Yes, as always,
Sarah. Yes, as always.
That's standard for us. But yeah, just as a reminder, if you have any questions, great questions so far, please stick them in the Q&A tab and we will get to them a little bit later on in the show. I remember seeing a video on drone delivery of Starbucks in China. So I welcome that. That'd be lovely right now. But who knows what the future holds. So yeah, it is time to welcome our first guest speaker. It was time 5 minutes ago, but as always, we run over. But before we do that, I am going to play a short video. Or are you going to do that, Paul?
I'm happy. No, you're going to do that. You're going to do that.
The Iveco video. Yes.
Yes, do that.
Please work. Is it working?
Yep.
Brilliant. My floss were bigger than Bishop. Do you know what? I've sawn through bigger.
Brilliant.
Very good.
Completely brilliant.
Excellent. Excellent.
Right, Sam, over to you to welcome our first guest speaker. Be no surprise.
Yes. who he's representing. Unfortunately, he's not in that video, which is a shame. But Mike, please do come on camera when you're ready. So Mike Cutts is the full range business line director for UK and Ireland for Iveco, managing the daily Eurocargo, Supercargo and Sway X-Way product. He is responsible for managing the business line to deliver the company objectives for market share, invoiced units, product specification and sales and marketing activity, which is a lot. Fun fact, Mike ran the London Marathon twice and cycled from London to Paris last year with Transaid. All on the same day, Mike, or did you have a break?
Definitely not.
No. All right. Well, Mike, as always, welcome to the show. Thank you for the video, by the way. That was a lot of fun. I haven't seen that before, and I think it's fantastic. And it's obviously a very good illustration of how we can repurpose energy now using vehicles and technology like you have with EPTO that you might have seen on the back of the van, which is electric power takeoff. But I'll let you carry on and take over from there.
Also useful to show how we can repurpose our key account managers from sales guys to lumberjacks as well. So George is now fully qualified to chop down any tree that's required if you need his services. But Yeah, anyway, on to last mile delivery. So I guess from our perspective, last mile could mean lots of different things. The great thing about our product range is that it's very versatile. And depending upon what that last mile mission is, we've kind of got the product to meet that criteria. So thinking about a courier driver delivering parcels, probably the number one requirement of that customer is load space. And, we have the largest panel van in the sector with 19.6 cubic meters of carrying capacity. So eDaily comes in our longest wheelbase, high roof van for that mission. If you've got a customer that is looking to carry payload, maybe into the city, where they're looking to downsize their medium trucks to large vans, for example, we have the 7.2-ton eDaily, now available on a 5100 wheelbase with up to four batteries and 148 kilowatts. With a box van, tail lift, solar on the roof, that can offer the customer over 3 tons of payload. So practical for them to electrify their fleet on that mission. And then if it's more specialist, where you might need an EPTO, so for example, refrigerated transport, supermarket mission, great example, where eDaily has the choice of up to two EPTOs. And some customers actually need up to two, because if they're running a fridge, they might need one EPTO to run the fan and a second EPTO to run the fridge. So having the ability to offer EPTO all the way up to 50 kilowatts, probably a bit over the top for a fridge van conversion, but really kind of giving customers the full choice of what they need to do with their mission. Things like fridge last mile delivery as well are fully achievable through eDaily. So we truly do have kind of a product for every last mile mission. And I think the other thing that's really clear that from some of our customers is the choice of charging speed is really essential, because customers are running different shift patterns. The supermarket customer, for example, great. They're doing a two shift model. So the vehicle's returning back halfway through the day, restock the vehicle, and they do a top up of the charge on a 22 kilowatt AC. Meaning that they don't have to invest in a DC, but still gives them 50, 60 miles range for a top-up charge for an hour over lunch, which is enough for them to go and then do their second shift. So eDaily offering 22 kilowatt AC as an option is a real benefit for allowing quick charge-up of opportunity charging without needing to invest in really expensive infrastructure. And that's working really well for our customers as well. That's my sales pitch over. But hopefully a good idea of how last mile can really be associated with our product range in lots of many different ways.
Excellent.
I have to say, Mike, I've been incredibly impressed, in the journey that we've gone on together over the last couple of years as this vehicle has come to market. And it has come to market in a way that most others haven't, and that is to do everything that a diesel could, but in an electric form. And okay, we have the exception slightly of ultimate range, but most operations, most missions, as you would term it, don't need 300 miles a day, 200 miles a day. In fact, they probably need less than 100 miles a day, particularly in and around the last mile operation. So, the fact that you've given the customer, a completely versatile and comprehensive offer in the eDaily has always impressed me, as you know. And I'm not just blowing smoke just because you're a sponsor, as you know. So there you go.
No, our customers on average are driving 50 to 80 miles a day on a last mile mission. So a two battery eDaily will more than cover that. And that's a great compromise between range and payload. A supermarket customer wants 900 kilos of payload. Without that, the vehicle's not fit for purpose. So they'd love a three battery model to give them more range, but then they don't have the payload to carry the delivery items that they're delivering to people's homes. So it's trying to strike the balance between one and the other. And eDaily does that because it gives the customer a choice of up to four batteries, so they can kind of decide which works best for them.
I think I'd love too that you can switch it around in life. So, what if the operation changes or you need to redeploy a vehicle somewhere else, you can take out or add a battery mid-life, giving you that extra range or taking that extra payload option.
Yeah, subject to the wheelbase being long enough to fit an extra battery in. Yeah. But yeah, you can add batteries or you can remove them. So it gives the future-proofing of the product as well, which obviously a lot of people are nervous about future residuals on vehicles and, you know, what am I going to do when I come to sell it? Well, this just gives that customer a little bit of extra security around. It opens it up to a much wider customer base because they've got the option to customize it as well.
Johnny's been trying
question.
To speak twice.
I was going to ask a question around the modular system, but you've already kind of highlighted that, Mike. And I think for me, that flexibility is key because there are no two last mile delivery operations environments that are the same in this industry. So being able to cater the needs of all the different various types. But over to you, Sab.
No, I was just going to raise a point that actually bizarrely Paul made, which was very relevant, which was a word that he used anyway, which was versatile. And I think key thing here is versatility, which is what's impressive about a van like this, because in my day I didn't have that versatility at all, and yet there was a question in there I think by Jamie Fretwell earlier, said, Sam, what is a large van in your definition? And I went to answer it, and then I thought, well, actually, what I in my world it was last mile e-commerce, and therefore I needed cube. Payload was irrelevant, whereas Mike's just given an example of where payload is incredibly relevant. So I don't think there is a straight up definition, is there? So because every different and both of those different scenarios, whether e-commerce or food, is large scale, that's large volume stuff, which gets me excited because that makes material difference. And the same van needs to do a different thing for those two examples alone, let alone the myriad of other ones. So I think versatility is really a key thing here, because every vehicle that is created like this, that allows that versatility to adapt to different scenarios, is where we'll get scale. And that's what I'm all about, is scale. How do we get things that can do mass change and move the needle? So we need that versatility to get the accessibility to a wider market share. So it wasn't really a question. It was more just an observation.
Thank you, Sam. And I'm looking forward to the day that Mike gives me an eDaily campervan conversion.
Oh, yeah.
So that is versatile.
Join the list, Johnny.
Thank you very much. That's all we have time for with you, Mike, at the moment.
Lower my hand. I'll have to wait for later.
Oh, sorry,
very
Sarah.
Annoying.
So we can squeeze one more in, Sarah, for you.
Well, I think we should, because it's two things. The observation, Mike, and the whole team of Echo, just wonderful way to bring something like this to life. Anybody who's had the opportunity to see it at the CV show, where we had the EV Cafe Village, lots of people enjoying that power takeoff for small things like mobile phones. But there's a question here from Simon Cordery, which I think is really relevant. And please do all put your questions in the Q&A tab. We might not spot them in the chat. It says, can the power takeoff capability scale where the logistic requirement is that the delivery of power rather than the goods, i.e. a temporary or remote location, as an alternative solution to a portable generator? And then goes on to add, can it provide three-phase power?
Yeah, so I mean, we've got many different choices of EPTO from a power output perspective. So 2.5 being at its lowest, all the way up to 50 kilowatts being at its highest. Ultimately, that's going to access the traction battery power that you've got. So it'll run as long as you've got battery power to keep the EPTO going. And it's for the customer to choose which EPTO is at the right capacity for the customer's operation. One really clever thing that we can do is that the customer can specify a mechanical EPTO from the factory. So we can convert the electrical onboard power to mechanical and rotational onboard power as well, which means that if there's equipment that you would run traditionally off a diesel generator remotely, towing it behind a diesel van, you could now run that equipment directly off an electric vehicle like the eDaily. So it brings the full solution to the workplace rather than having to take auxiliary equipment with you. And that's all specified from factory under the warranty with the rotational power already ready for the bodybuilder to plug in whatever equipment it is that they need. So there's a solution there.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Mike.
We're even more behind time now, thanks to you, Sarah.
Yay. Oh, what a bit. Yeah, thanks, Simon Cordery.
Worth it.
Sam, over to you for the next guest speaker, please.
Yeah, I'll try and get us back on track. Stuart Murphy works at Rommel. No, I'm kidding. That would be unfair. Right, Stuart is head of fleet transformation for Royal Mail. He designs the fleet transformation strategy to ensure it supports the wider business needs. This includes anything from maintenance provisions to electric vehicle deployment. However, get this number around your shops. To date, Stuart has introduced just over 5,000 EVs to Royal Mail and is now introducing even more. 5,000. That's amazing. What isn't so amazing, depending on what the answer to the question is his fun fact. And that is to say he has a longer than most body part, which is I'm just grateful that John Curtis isn't here because he would have dined out on this. So, Stu, if you can share, but
it's got to be Nick. Got to be.
Hello. It's not Nick. It's not Nick. Believe it or not, I'm an 80s child, and my nan, unfortunately, living through the war and everything else, lost her teeth. So she had dentures, and when I was a young child, she used to take her dentures out, and she could do weird and wonderful things with her tongue. I can do those weird and wonderful things without dentures. I've got a full teeth set of teeth, and my tongue is the long body part.
Wow!
So glad you said that. That's great news.
So, for example, if I'm on camera,
yes. Oh my God!
There you go. Exactly. So yes.
Wow.
So Neil Turner says Guinness World Record coming up.
To be fair, the bloke that owns the Guinness Book of Records for longest tongue puts weights and everything on his tongue to stretch it. I was at one stage, yeah, it's like a muscle, so you have to work it, but I was at one stage very close to that without the weights wow. and everything else. So so there you go, there's my fun wow. fact. And yeah, I knew the moment I put that in my thing, somebody's gonna go, yeah, this is gonna be rude.
I genuinely thought we were seconds away from being cancelled.
I think if JC was here, we would be cancelled because he'd still find a way, let me tell you.
Well, let's see if he really watches it back or not, because he will no doubt post if he is. Mm.
Anyway, Stuart, tell us what we need to know.
Okay, so let's as Sam alluded to, so we've got over 5,000 vehicles on the fleet, and we're just... publicised another 2,100 going in this year. So as you can imagine, really busy, all going in our final mile fleet as it stands at the moment. So small, medium vans. The bit for Royal Mail is, Sam touched on it, we go everywhere. So City Isles, Scottish Isles, or anywhere else, we need to find a solution, which is why we are looking at drones, because at the moment we have a man who rows out to some of these islands, and if the weather isn't good, we don't send him. So we need to find solutions that are great for every weather occurrence, and to make sure that that piece of mail that is so important to us that it gets to where it needs to get to has a solution. So that's why we are trialing and testing everything we possibly can to make sure that mail gets to where it needs to be. My claim to fame at the moment is I've got a fleet of micro EVs in the City Isles that are delivering the mail every day. They go down to collect the mail from the beach. So they're specifically like beach buggy type EVs. I go down there. The boat can't harbour, so it comes to the edge of the water. The mail is put on the sand. We go down and collect it in an EV. So things like that we have to look at. So it's not just about how do we do deliveries around London? It's how do we do deliveries everywhere? Every bit of mail that people send for us is just as important. So we need to find a solution. When it comes to final mile, we don't just do final mile in small vans. So we've got about 40,000 small vans on the fleet, but we've got other companies that do final mile like Parcel Force. And believe it or not, we do final mile deliveries in 7.5 tonners, 18 tonners, Arctics, where our customers are big enough to take those types of deliveries. So it's not just a small van solution. And that's why we're looking at electrifying big trucks. With the help of Sam and his team at GridServe. So
Yeah, we're trying to look at things. And going back on the cargo bike solution, of course, we're looking at that. And for us, it will be a mixed solution. Yeah, there will be a demand for a micro vehicle. There will be a demand for a cargo bike. Yeah, because of how big we are and our operation. But it's how many, and it's trying to work out volumetrics of a parcel and where's the tipping point for a cargo bike and what's the next solution and do you have the infrastructure for the next solution that you might not have with a micro bike. So all of these things we have to work out before we deploy to make sure we understand the longevity of the solution we're putting in and what's the next solution once that longevity has run out. And that's the complexity. But in terms of final mile, we're introducing, as I said, by the end of this financial year, we'll have over 7,000 EVs. And they're brilliant for our operation. Final mile for us is about walking the streets. And actually, our EV fleet complements that. So walking the streets, net zero. Yeah, our people walking the streets every day. Yeah, it's a fantastic environmentally friendly solution. And it's getting them to that street that we want to make sure is also environmentally friendly. That makes us at the moment the number one in terms of environmentally friendly delivery company in terms of the big ones. And that's where we want to stay. So it's the complementary of our service that's important to us.
I'm going for virtual hand and real hand in case somebody doesn't spot it, because I can't type. I want all the audience to put their questions, which you're putting in the chat, into the Q&A tab, which I can't do. So I get to raise my hands. I have a couple of questions, actually. And thank you, Stuart, for being here. I last saw you face to face at the Juice event last December, and you read us a story. We're going on an EV hunt, which is very much the bear hunt turned into EV hunt. And yeah, but there's a couple of questions in the chat about that. Is how do you organise that sort of EV recharge situation out and about? So that's one question. The second one is about definitions of cargo cycles. Listening to you just reminded me, you know, when you say cargo cycle, you think of something with a big box on the front, perhaps. And only a couple of weekends ago, I went to a steam fair. And other fun things are available at weekends. But there was a whole fleet of bikes, most of which were Royal Mail or the ambulance or the fire service or the army. And they just had a sort of tray on the front. And I see some of those around here rurally where I live too. So I'd love to understand your proportions and how you apply the technology to the area that there's being served. So I don't know which order you want to take those in. So one, what do you think is your definition of cargo bikes? And two, how do you handle recharging on the go out and about, including rural areas?
Blimey, right. Okay, so cargo bikes, it depends on where you want to put them and it depends on what the solution is. So you've got to be careful that you don't go too big with a cargo bike and you end up where there's a public access for a bike, the thing won't fit. So you've got to understand before you do anything, what are the parcels that are coming through your network and to what extent it's going to be. So you can get cargo bikes where you could go back to putting a pouch on the front that we used to run and things like that. Now, we went away from that due to safety and we put everybody in vans, which is, but how do you need to get something to its destination and the route it needs to take? And one of the things we've learned with doing our testing is you very quickly get to a really big solution that ends up being actually a van if you're not careful. So like I said, cargo bikes will have their place in Royal Mail's network, I'm sure of that. Do we know at this moment in time exactly where? Probably not, more testing to do. Do we know the size, shape, and what it will look like? No, there's probably more testing in that world as well. What we've got to be key, what's really key to us is whatever we deploy has to work. That's probably not the greatest answer I could give you, Sarah, but that's where we are.
There's more chance later for more Q&A, so thank you for having a stab.
Thank you. Any more questions from the team?
I'm just looking at the time, Jeppy. I think we might go on.
We've ruined the agenda anyway.
Let me just say, we have a chance to speak to Stuart extensively this coming Sunday at Carfest.
Oh, I can't wait.
Stuart, tell us about the vehicle that will be being displayed.
So it's our brand new EV. So it's our newest vehicle straight off the Stellantis production line. It's the first EV to have the new King Crown logo. So Royal Mail's logo has changed, everybody. Yeah, if you didn't know, King Charles has got a new crown. So our logo has changed to reflect that. And of course, we've got the new crown on the side of the van as well. So you'll be able to see that at Carfest.
So I want a new crown.
World first, everybody. A world first.
Seeing Paul speak at the show probably isn't a reason to go, but that sounds like a proper reason.
I'll just be asking Stuart questions.
We do have our Royal Mail van spotter society out there. So if you're listening and you want to get your first glimpse and you want to get your cameras out, that's where you're going to see it.
Okay, I'm sure Paul will try to nab a quick video and get it out there as soon as
before anybody else. Absolutely, Royal Mail spotters, right?
I have so many questions for you, Stuart, but the million-dollar question, as long as you were listening this morning, who's right about cargo bikes, Sam or Paul?
I think Paul is maybe a bit too enthusiastic at this stage. I think there's a lot of testing and trialing to do. Yeah, I know a lot of my competition have got them at the moment and are using them. Fantastic if they work. I think they will have a place. I don't think it will be as big as Paul maybe is hoping, but they'll certainly have a place and work alongside our van fleet.
So is that a way of saying that you agree with Sam?
If I had to make a decision, I'd be in the Sam camp, not the Paul camp.
I'm so sorry, Paul. I was hoping it'd be the other way around.
That's fine. I'm quite comfortable, but I mean, I'm not advocating them as a major part. I am advocating them as a viable part of the solution.
Same. And I agree with that.
There you go. So okay. It's 1-1.
Yeah. Yeah. We all agree with each other. We're all friends. Thank you so much, Stuart.
Thanks, Stuart.
Come back on a bit later, but it's definitely now time to welcome
thanks,
our next speaker. Over to you, Sam.
Thanks, Stuart and Paul. You can put your shovel down now. All right, so the next Paul. Paul McCormack, there he is, right on cue. Paul, CEO of Decarbon Logistics. Paul has 20-plus years experience within the last mile logistics. He designed and launched the Amazon DSP delivery model. With a genuine passion for startups, he has established last-mile operations in UK, Europe, India, and North America. He is currently focused on the development of sustainable urban logistics and the wider commitment to decarbonisation. Fun fact, and he gave three, and I picked one out. I decided to go for the one that amused me the most, which was that he has often been likened to Dara O'Brien, the Irish comedian, though he says he's funnier.
I added that,
but at the end.
The person who did actually tell me that, I said, is that because he's funny and Irish? They said, no, he's slightly overweight and balding. So I wish I hadn't asked. But I've been around Final Mile Logistics for many, many years. And interesting, I'm probably going to, I'd definitely be in the van camp previously, but I am certainly seeing lots more advantages of cargo bikes over the last number of years. And I've got some slides, if that's possible, just to quickly run
through.
Let's try and not show you all the personal stuff. Would be the age old. Interestingly, a friend of mine said he was the godfather of cargo bikes because he started running cargo bikes about 20 years ago. He's certainly predated by about 150 years. So it's the point I'm making here. It's not necessarily new stuff. I'm going to rattle through these because, in the interest of time, but what I'm trying to get across here is there's tons of different models out there. There's ones with trailers, there's ones with detachable units. You'll have seen lots of these in the market at the moment. The word that I will call out that Sam said is scale, which is absolutely super important here. And I think that's part of the barrier, which I'm going to come on to in a second, for real full optimization across logistics networks. So just some stats here. Someone asked me the other day saying, oh, you're on this thing about cargo bikes. How many cargo bikes are in the UK? I haven't got a clue, if I'm honest. I would say you're talking thousands rather than tens of thousands. But if we look at the current situation, we all know we need to reduce vans. And I know the group, this group will be absolutely committed to making them EV. And we see year over year progress in terms of vans being switched to EV. But that's still a relatively small number out of about 4.5 million vans. It's probably 1 or 2%, something like that. And then we look at the congestion. So we've got to do something. And swapping out van for, an EV sounds great. Listen, when I was out in India, I had this view of, look, I can do all the volume they want in vans. I didn't put a single van on the road. It was all about bikes and walkers and all the rest of it. So I think it's important to look at the environment. And it's already mentioned about the difference, big difference between rural and urban. And then you've got the cost of operation and obviously the emissions that go along with it. Now, the cost of, I've read somewhere the other day that actually there's about 7.5 billion is allegedly lost year over year in terms of congestion costs and over 60 hours per driver. That's a national average that is lost in terms of congestion. Right. So some benefits of cargo bikes, just to put something back on the table to say, actually, not all bad news. You can access bus lanes, cycle lanes. You can deliver faster. That's just me saying that. There's been several studies, both in Belgium, the University of Westminster, and also in Seattle. You can deliver, you can actually get faster speeds. You'll see there in the bottom right, 13.6 versus 7.7. You don't have any of the fees that goes along with it. There's also a benefit of maybe putting some advertising on the screens. You'll see some really cool stuff out there. So that's kind of some stuff. Now, this is a whole topic by itself, because I am very much aware of the challenges associated with rolling out cargo bikes at scale. If I start at the bottom right, so the bike capacity. So there's lots of different variations. And I think I saw something on the chat, someone mentioned about e-bikes and stuff. I probably focus more on cargo bikes specifically, on the large final mile stuff. But there's lots of really cool use cases for, e-bikes, for point to point, sub same day, that type of thing, your food deliveries, things like that. But if I actually did a project where we brought volume from the outskirts of the city, taking vans off the road, bringing it in on larger vehicles, but the cost per shipment actually went up. So you've got to, it will be very different for each operator. So just to take that into account. If we look at the top left, which is the area I'm most interested in, is because I've actually got more interest in cargo bikes about trying to find the right locations, underutilized real estate in city center areas, because nobody's going to run out a national operation, in my view, without actually having a synergistic strategy around how they deal with real estate. And from experience, trying to find real estate, trying to get access to it, and even down to who owns the property. There's been many a time I've actually tried to do a deal and then find that actually the person who said they own the property or have a long-term lease, they either don't, or they don't have the rights or the permissions to actually make those changes. And then where I have seen some good stuff, I see people like CRP and Grid who do the on-street parking. I can see that as being quite useful in terms of how people navigate their way around the cities and allocate areas. And we're working on stuff in the US where, it's about parts of the city that will be allocated for delivery purposes. But it's also about how it links to rail, road and river freight as well. I know time's running out. This is just an example of an urban hub that, where a car park we worked with Wandsworth, with CRP and Delivery Mates, the operator, we just took a section of the car park and we made it useful for delivery. Now, what we do probably better than anyone, I would say, is that we qualify it down to within an inch of its life, all the standard operating procedures, to trying to run out of the excuses, because it's dead easy for people to say, this isn't going to work, we don't want cargo bikes here, et cetera, et cetera. And even one of the challenges with this site was, we couldn't get the vehicles in. They're large enough to actually trigger the barriers, but because there's no registration, we had to kind of cobble together like solutions to get them in and out. So in the interest of just trying to wrap things up, so where I do see some benefits, I think we will see some larger cargo bikes where they will be competing with vans. And the point about the actual width, I think the maximum width between bollards in the UK is 1.2 metres. Most of the cargo bikes I've been looking at recently are less than that. So if you can get through those security barriers, I do think there's a regulatory piece here as well from a security point of view. You don't just want to let anybody in and out. So I think there will be much more regulated, which I put in there. Where I think it was about 6 months ago, I last checked this, but there's only one organisation I know of that actually has gone through the European DIN standards. So I think that's also a part of this we need to be mindful of, is the quality of the vehicles that are out there. Obviously, it's my passion is about urban hubs and pre-qualifying locations, save people time and effort, energy. If you can't park a large vehicle outside it, like Sam, you talked about bringing, larger scale vehicles. If I'm trying to drop it off somewhere, you'd be amazed at the difficulties that goes along with that. I also see containerization, unitization. I mean, you're seeing on some of those pictures earlier whereby there's different sort of modules, pods, whatever you want to call them, totes. And I do think there's going to be a level of standardization is going to come along, whether I take it off the back of a van, put it onto a cargo bike, a walker, whether I put it on the rail or on a riverboat. I think that consistency is something I see as being beneficial. And the final couple there with batteries, management of batteries, particularly in underground car parks, is a real challenge. And I'm sure you guys are well aware of that. I think there's going to be more healthy competition. Some of these cargo bikes are nearly 20,000, which is just, you know, that I could get a van for that. So that's got to come down. But I think you're going to see more more products coming in from the Far East. Integrated technology mobility solutions. So whether it's an e-bike, an e-scooter, you know, having all of that applications living together. And the holy grail would be, and we see this in some cities around the world, Amsterdam being one of them, and I know it was mentioned earlier, but around shared urban planning and shared consolidation centers. And I'm not naive enough to think that all the carriers are suddenly going to start playing nicely together because it's their customer. But I do think for me, that is the holy grail. And I do think that is going to happen as cities take more control. So apologies, I probably trashed the time there, but that's it. Any questions?
You've done really well there, Paul.
Yeah, you got it all.
You shared all that info in only 5 minutes. So thank you. I was a bit worried at times. No, you're going to keep going.
Now, and I'm not known for my brevity. Anybody who's on the call is probably laughing. Can't actually be heard, but probably just as well.
The other Paul could learn a thing or two.
I think I was really great. I mean, it's impossible to do that presentation justice in the time frame that you had available. There's so much in there. But I think one of the land elements was really interesting. We haven't touched on yet that there is a land cost attributed to trying to run cycle freight because it has to be in the city centre and you've got to try and find usable spaces like car parks. I used to lease how many properties? 3 or 4, I think, in central London that cost about 50,000 square feet of car parks and archways that was cost me about £500,000 a year in additional cost. It didn't mean that the depot on the outside wasn't that. It was on top of, and you've got to try and make that money back before you've even jumped on a bike. So there are loads of other sort of extenuating circumstances, many of which you highlighted or were in that presentation, that they've got those extra costs. Yeah, that's a lot of money to try and recover just to break even with the competitors who are in a cheap five-year-old diesel sprinter van, right? So yeah, I think it's really, really important that all those other variables are highlighted. And I think you did a great job on that presentation to do that.
Thank you.
Before we ask any more questions, can I ask that Stuart and Mike join for the last 10 minutes of the webinar? And just as a reminder to the audience, if you have any questions for our special guests, then this is your last chance. So get them in the question and answers tab, please. Thank you.
There's a few in there, actually. Should we dive in?
There is.
Yeah. We can, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to go for, I just saw David Rosselli's 5,000 EVs, which is actually going to be over 7,000 by next financial year, is impressive. What percentage is that of the total fleet, please, Stuart? If you don't know, don't worry, we can pick it up later. Do you know the percentage of the total fleet that 7,000 will represent?
Yeah, so at the moment, the 5,000 is about 10% of our overall fleet. It's about 12 to 13% of our final mile fleet. And in terms of our overall fleet, it will be about 13, 14%, I think, something like that.
Wow.
Thank you, Stuart. Ian Thompson's asked a couple of questions. I'll go for the longer one. So he's saying, regarding last mile deliveries, so he's saying he's a reservation holder for the app Terra. And he mentions that last mile delivery was one of those markets suggested for solar electric vehicle market, even though it was less van-like shape out there. And he also likes the Renault truck smallest vehicle. I'm not going to try and pronounce what that is. I don't know if you want to, Sarah. I guess the question here is, what other ideas, innovations, vehicles are your favourite or to look out for? I'll ask you, Stuart.
So I actually got a solar panel company on the phone to me. They were trying to sell me a cargo bike at the time. And I said, oh, brilliant. It's run by solar. This is fantastic. And they were a company from a different country. And I said, right, how much solar can I get out of this for this vehicle? And they said, no, you don't have enough sun in the UK. So that was that conversation cut very quickly to a halt. So in terms of it, of course, we actually use solar on top of our trailers and things like that at the moment. So we do use solar for vehicles. Really keen to understand if there are any solar solutions or any other solutions to run EVs and give us that extra bit. And I know a lot of companies out there are using solar to add that little bit of power to run kit on the vehicles and things like that. So it is out there. For us at the moment, not something we're using. We don't carry kit like some companies do. Yeah, we're all about delivering parcels and letters at the end of the day. So not necessarily something that we need, but certainly as we get into our bigger vehicles and we want that extra bit of range, if there's somebody out there that can sell something to me, come and talk to me.
It would seem that company needs to revise their marketing strategy, really.
just slightly, yes.
Ian Thompson asked another question. Any news on the changes to the EV Cat B driving license changes for up to 4.25-ton vehicles? Are we still stuck with a 5-hour assessment from before 2022? Paul, you're nodding there.
Well, I mean, Mike, I'd love to defer to you for the initial answer, but we know that not a lot has changed. What are your thoughts on the subject, and do you see anything changing in the near future? Because it hasn't changed.
Yeah, well, we're kind of waiting for it all to be passed through government. But I guess with the governmental changes that have happened, that's thrown another spanner in the works. It was promised for summer of this year, and summer has kind of been and it's nearly gone. And there's been no news about when those changes are going to take place. So your guess is as good as mine. I think there's still that intention to do it. SMMT is still lobbying to make it happen. I think everybody agrees that it's really unnecessary, and it's just another barrier that everyone could do without. But when it'll happen, who knows? Sooner the better, but we just don't know.
Stuart, do you use 4.25-ton vans in your fleet? Would that help your operation at all?
So it's certainly something we're looking at quite strongly at the moment. I think... Just picking up, I think, unfortunately, the general election has played a part in us not getting the answer. And I think the Labour Party need a bit of time to get their feet under the table for this to go through its necessary path to get us the right answer. But I am led to believe it is in the path. It's just been held up a little bit.
Yeah, agreed. That's everything that we hear. We put it to government back in February as part of the zero emission van plan with the BVRLA, Logistics UK and REA, AFP and ourselves, putting forward a plan to government that asked them to address this specific issue, particularly around the 5 hours training, the MOT, the tachograph, all of the elements that have caused consternation. Hasn't been sorted yet. The DFT haven't changed. The personnel haven't changed. So I'm hoping we might get... some help Paul, there.
Paul, it's my understanding the 5 hours has gone.
No, it was removed. It was told that it was removed back in December last year. And according to the DFT, they just said, yeah, we've just got to get it signed off. So they agreed it, but didn't sign it off. So that is still there. That's kind of the issue, is that the MOT was left outside of the consultation, as was the tachograph, but they didn't actually sign it off. So in the same way the ZEV mandate was announced in September but wasn't signed off till December, this is the same thing. It got announced whenever it got announced and hasn't been signed off yet, sadly.
Johnny, right, can I have one for Paul M. One from Paul Barnfather that said, should cargo bikes have number plates? And what he's really alluding to, I think, is that these vehicles are getting much, much bigger, much heavier, carrying much larger payloads. Should they be registered as they used to be previously in my day? We'd had to start registering our vehicles with indicators and headlights and number plates in order to keep them on the road. And then they relaxed the regulations. But now they're becoming more prevalent and they're getting bigger and heavier, should that be really looked at? Because they are effectively a motorized vehicle now.
I would say yes. I would, from a practical point of view, the different size and shape, we've tried to get them into one of the car parks, and just getting a number plate at the right level to be recognized by the cameras and stuff. But in short, yes, would be my answer to that. I think that's from a security and that they could be vetted as well, whether it's a QR code or something. So if you have an audit process, it could be checked to say, when was this vehicle actually last serviced, if you will, things like that, I think would be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the net result of that, unfortunately, though, is that puts up even more cost, right? Because the vehicles have to be registered. You'd have to have driving licenses to drive. They'd have to be taxed. They'd have to have motor insurance. And therefore, it's cost being added on the top, isn't it?
Well, yeah, in theory, if we're going to use the current rules, but I think if we're talking about trying to make it a more sustainable network, then, you know, maybe there's a regulatory part here that makes it more, you know,
somewhere in between, maybe stand on scooters that go down pavements might fit in the same sort of category of something between the two. I see.
There's I think there's a category L7, isn't there? So motorized vehicle, which has a different rules and regs around them, and then smaller vehicles.
Most of these are fall under just a standard bike. So, but I do think to points that's been raised is there will be, I think, more challenge because of the scale and size of them. So, but at the moment, they're just bikes.
The EV Cafe's fun. Talking about bikes.
Paul, quick question for you, if I may. Given the cost of cargo bikes, do you think that, you know, because we've had grants for cars, we've had grants for vans, we've got grants for trucks. Do you see grants being something that government might feel would help drive the price down? Because I understand the commercial challenge.
Maybe. I think the point that's been raised there about the real estate, there's so many factors. What I will say, though, is you can actually buy some of the cargo bikes in bulk for $8,000 to $10,000. So if you buy them in bulk and then you take that responsibility, if you want a lease solution, you're probably going to pay more because you've got the service and maintenance. And I genuinely believe when you get more of these in the market, the cost will naturally come down anyway. They'll be flat packed out in the Far East, brought in here. The tech will be added, some of the extra bits. I don't know is the short answer whether there will be, you know, sort of like sort of government grants that might be added, but could be.
Thank you.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for. It's already 12 o'clock. Don't know where the time went. I just want to say a big thanks to Stuart, Mike and Paul for their insights today. It's very well received. And please make sure that you join our LinkedIn channel if you're not already. Subscribe so you don't miss out on any future events. We're also on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. So if you haven't had enough of us, then go see some more of us there. And thanks for those that have joined on Zoom, LinkedIn and YouTube. We do appreciate it. Just as a reminder, we've got news on Friday. Have we got news on Friday still?
No, good question. Because we're all at Carfest.
Why are we not? What's happening on Friday then, Paul?
We've got Carfest. It kicks off and it's going to be amazing.
So if you want to come and see us or to a great event, then we'll be at the Carfest at the weekend with our friends from AA Europe Car and Iveco. So don't miss out. And thank you very much, everybody.